They call us hell jumpers. Because we drive into the unknown with bombs falling, risking everything to rescue civilians. Volunteer Evacuator, Ukraine War, 2022. Hell Jumper. Inside a car travelling at night, windscreen wipers sweeping back and forth, the lights of another car travelling the other way. Cornwall, United Kingdom.
Rob here. Sorry, I can't pick up the phone right now, but I'll leave a message and I'll get back to you.
Oh, hi, Rob. You mentioned that you had some of Chris's things that you'd retrieved. I'd love to have a look at them, if that's okay. Thanks a lot. See you soon.
A middle-aged couple are waiting at their front door.
Hello, Paddy.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Christine.
All right?
Rob shows Paddy along a landing to a bedroom.
Well, this is Chris's bedroom.
This is Chris's?
Yep. It hasn't changed very much since he was here. This is the bag which came back from Ukraine, which...
This is the gear that he had out?
Yeah, yeah. This is the helmet he would have been wearing. Camouflage jacket. This band on his right arm, which would have denoted that he was a volunteer. And his computer. This, to me, is the world, because this shows Chris. There's video footage of Chris on missions.
Is this material that he filmed himself?
Yeah, this GoPro. I feel that I should go through it. I want to go through it, but I feel I've got to go through it to be with Chris.
Rob plays a video on Chris's laptop.
OK, we are in the grey zone now. I'm not trying to find my way to this house.
Filmed through the windscreen, Chris's vehicle pulls up outside a single-storey brick building. In early 2022, Chris Parry travelled to Ukraine. From the stationary vehicle, the film shows a slim man wearing a helmet get out, walk along the side of the building and peer around the corner. The camera is then used like a body cam.
Okay. Just fucking around the gauntlet.
He films himself running around the corner across rubbish-strewn ground between buildings and flats. For months, he filmed himself evacuating people from the front line. In a deserted block of flats, he opens a front door and enters. Good day. Evacuation.
Fuck, they're not even here.
His camera would capture the final days of his life. He pauses at the entrance to the block, outside rubble-strewn ground in dazzling sunshine.
Fuck.
He makes a run for it across the open ground. The screen is black for a long moment. 28 years earlier, dated 2nd of January 1995, home video of Christine, Chris's mum, holding a tiny baby wrapped in a blanket.
This is Christopher Matthew.
3:15 in the morning.
He was born at 1:53.
I didn't really enjoy being pregnant, I have to say. He was a very active baby, that's for sure.
Even then he was on the move.
Yes, that's right.
Family photos of Chris growing up.
I'm 18 months older than Chris. Technically, I'm his older sister,
but he always felt like my older brother. We spent our childhood outdoors, climbing trees, racing around in a petrol go-kart.
He was at the top of the class for maths and science. Just very academic, but with that, very sporty, very social. Just brilliant, all round a brilliant.
He could be a stubborn prick when he wanted to be. Like, he's not like, you know, he's human. Like, when he fixates on stuff and obsesses on stuff.
There wasn't any discussion about sort of whether we should do it or not. He would have gone and done it already.
Relentless.
Yes, oh yeah, completely relentless.
Chris running into the sea, then Rob and Christine's house at night. 24th of February, 2022.
In Kyiv today, a frightening new dawn for Europe and Ukraine. This city of 3 million awoke to sirens and an invasion. President Putin, who insisted it would never come, warning that no one should try to stop him.
Угроза для нашей страны, для нашего народа.
Whoever tries to interfere with us or threaten our country should know Russia's response will be immediate and will lead to such consequences that have never been experienced in history.
Where was Chris when the Russians invaded Ukraine?
He was actually home with us, wasn't he? He became very, very interested in the news, more than he would usually do.
A day has changed everything for Ukraine and for security in Europe.
And he asked you that ultimate question, didn't he?
If I would ever fight for your country. So I said, yeah, of course I would. I said, without a shadow of a doubt. And that was the end of the story. That was all we said.
Online messages from UK Aid for Ukraine. Are you looking to volunteer? We can advise on getting there. Ex-services welcome. John, ex-army.
You're not going to use any big words on me now, are you? Because I'll just look stupid.
Only little ones.
Yeah. It was this outpouring of feeling for trying to do something to help. And I formed a messenger group. Chris got in touch with me, and his questions were relevant to joining some branch of the military to help with the fight.
I kind of just became obsessed with it. I was watching the news 24/7. I thought, I just have to go out there and help. I can't just stand by and let this happen without at least trying to help.
Because this was just theoretical at this point.
Yeah, so you're talking... So from the 24th is when it kicked off. That's when they invaded. On the 28th, he said, I'm flying to Poland tomorrow morning. Here it is for real. And he was the first of the guys, of all the people that we spoke to, that was going to go. I started asking him about, did he have any military experience? And he said, no. And then I said, have you got any firearms experience? And he said, no. I've never shot a gun. I don't remember him ever having squeezed the trigger. I said, you know, there's a likelihood that you'll probably kill one of your own side. I said, you're a danger to your friends if you haven't got the experience.
So the penny dropped.
Yeah. I said, does your parents know? And he said, no. He hadn't told his parents.
On a map, a broken line travels from Cornwall to Poland.
So he flew to Krakow, and he was there by lunchtime. I don't know if it was phone calls or texts, but he said, oh, I've met some other guys. He was in a hostel, and he said, I met some other guys that are going. I think he met an American guy.
People were helping each other out, and there were just message boards and people connecting one another. Nobody knew each other, but it was just like, I know a person who knows a person who knows a person who needs this. And so I get a message from... Chris says, hey, I'm Chris. I'm looking to go to Ukraine. Can I catch a ride with you? And I was like, yeah, come on board. We'll figure it out. I have a business in Ukraine with Ukrainian employees. I wanted to help. So we're in a van delivering humanitarian supplies. Chris had his passport, but he forgot his driver's license. That's why he's looking to catch a ride with somebody. He seemed overly confident that everything would be fine. I'm like, you don't have a driver's license. Aren't you going to need that? And he's like, well, it's a war. They're not going to question anything. I was like, okay, it's a good point. We waltzed up to the border like it was nothing. There was no wait. And everybody was going this way, and we were going this way. And we were like, are we crazy here that we're like going into a war zone where everybody else is trying to leave?
On a map, traveling from Chemyshel across the border into Ukraine.
We didn't know what to expect. The Russians were over on the eastern side of the country, and this is very much in the west. But as you get closer to the Lviv, you get more checkpoints and more serious checkpoints as well.
As Ukraine gets ready to defend itself, thousands of volunteers from all over the world arrive in the country. Volunteers posing for group photos, then a white woman in her 20s with long, light brown hair.
So my name's Brogan, and I'm from Dundee in Scotland. I was a cleaner for a while, and then I was in retail after that. Lidl and Aldi. I was putting out the newspapers for the customers when we opened, and there was that really famous image of the woman, and she had an injury on her head, and I knew from that moment that I wanted to do something.
It was the first time in my life that I felt empathy towards other people in a big way. But also, not to be too cheesy, but like as an American, Ukraine was trying to become more free, and so Russia came back in trying to take that away from them. And so that made me kind of pissed off, you know.
Well, day four of the war, I quit my job. My wife was not overly impressed when she figured out that I was going to go there. You know, I thought there was a good chance I'd never be coming back. Nobody knew what was going to happen at that stage.
I had this overwhelming feeling once crossing the border that I wasn't safe. I was, like, looking in amongst the forest because I thought I was going to see, like, Russians in there, you know. I was, like, just the level of complete panic. I didn't know what to expect. I thought there was going to be bombs everywhere, like, things like that. I mean, yeah, looking back, it was a pretty frantic kind of fear.
Yeah, I can honestly say that coming into Ukraine was just really exciting for me. I really enjoyed it, you know. Like, dude, heck yeah, 24, you know. Nothing else going on, why not?
Many of the volunteers head to Lviv, which becomes a base for humanitarian organizations.
So I'm traveling to Lviv now. Fucking hell, there's thousands upon thousands of women, children, babies out in the freezing cold outside the train station, waiting to get a train to escape.
Oh my god.
Security's high, being stopped by the military. Two times, maybe three times already. Sorry for the long message, but just thought I'd keep you updated.
We're taking this all in.
Yeah, just going through and figure out where it goes.
So we get to Lviv and we go to the hub. I was like, yeah, we rented this for the employees and it's a place to stay. And I mean, Chris, if you need to stay here, you can.
I heard that Brendan is arriving, so...
He's your boss.
He's my boss, so yeah, definitely I came out to meet him. We were impressed that he made the trip from America.
And then there's this guy...
And there's this guy with him, I don't know, this guy is just some British young lad.
I introduce him to everybody and, you know, hugs going around and stuff like that. Within 5 minutes, he's like, hey, that Olga, she is something else. And I was just like, whatever, dude, like, that's cool. Like, Ukrainians, especially Ukrainian women, tend to be a little, you know, standoffish at first.
I don't know, he was not very talkative at that point because I think we were all talking to Brandon. He just stood there and then we started to ask him questions. What is he doing here? And he just... like, well, yeah, I just came to help. I want to I just felt like this urge, I need to be here, and here I am. And I'm like, wow, what a crazy person. I actually thought he was crazy. I did like him, but I thought that's not something I want to be involved with.
She's in her 20s, pale-skinned with shoulder-length blonde hair. Arno, journalist.
The first weeks of the invasion, you had a lot of people who somehow tried to give a sense, a purpose to their life. And from everywhere, from every country. I met people from Colombia, Sri Lanka, New Zealand. So, just wandering around. And especially in the early days, I was in a cheap hostel. And this hostel was packed with people like that. And sometimes I had the feeling that being a journalist, I was the only one in that big hostel with an actual clear goal, being doing my work. The rest of the people were like trying to find something to do.
Some people are there to... they want to deliver bread, and they want to... I mean, I met a man that was... I think he's from Brazil. He was a clown that went to different war zones to put on shows for children. Like, there's all kinds of people. It's just a bunch of random people in a strange and crazy place.
Video of people sitting around chatting.
He was looking for a job, like for something to do, and he needed connections. So we went to the this humanitarian center. They were sending people to the east, to actual frontline places.
Towards the fighting?
Yes. Everyone was so surprised that he's from Britain and that he's coming to help. And everybody was like, dude, you're going to die. It's too dangerous out there. You do know what you're signing up for. And I saw him, like, really, like, being nervous. He wasn't showing, but, like, you could see that his hands are slightly shaking and he's just very quiet, sitting just in his own thoughts. And when we met the man and he asked him, what are the chances of us being killed? The man said, well, like, it's 50-50. And he's like, oh, 50-50, that's just... I'll take that chance. He relaxed immediately.
is ready to go. Is ready to go very soon, tomorrow. Please. Is the main boss of this van.
Chris told me that he hadn't told his parents where he was. He even didn't tell his friends. He made me take a picture of the contacts of his family and asked me if he's not coming back to get in touch with them and tell them where he was and, like, the story, my time with him. But I was like, there was barely any time with him at that point.
But he wanted to be noticed by you.
Yeah. He told me, like, he noticed me right away. Even in that humanitarian center, I was looking horrible. Just, it was so cold. I was wearing everything I had that could make me warm, like a horrible hat and just no makeup. All the jackets I had, like two sweaters and probably two pants and three socks. But he did say that he liked me right away. It was actually nice to be in the center of somebody's attention that much. And I did see him nervous and I held his hand. So that maybe he saw that me holding his hand as a sign or something that he can actually make a move. So he did try to kiss me before leaving for the East. But no, he did not. He tried. And then he left to the East. But he sent me this voice messages.
Okay, Olya, thank you so much for this morning. Honestly, it means the world to me. It's hard to explain. I don't know why I'm talking to you like, honey. Okay, I can speak to you normally.
Yeah. So, I have many hours on the road, and I was wondering if you could possibly assist me in learning Ukrainian. Why not get some practice in trying to actually listen and then repeat and just do that for the next 300 hours? If you could do that, that'd be amazing.
On a map, he travels past Dnipro. Olya and Chris exchange voice notes.
The G sound is G, and the other one without the kick is H. And X is H.
How would you spell Chris? Chris.
You need to work on your R sound. If you write it the way you wrote it, it would sound like Chris.
Yeah, but my name is neither of those. It's Chris. Chris. Is. Not Chris.
On a map with animated explosions, his route takes him into the Donbass region, heading to Luhansk. Chris's video from inside his vehicle shows it following another car through a desolate, bombed-out region.
So what's it like when you first arrive on the front line?
It's crazy. It's a serious war, and the war is, you know, the war is bombing. That's hundreds, thousands of shells a day. Who knows how many shells get fired a day? There's unexploded ordnance all over the place. Rockets stuck in the ground.
Across the Donbass, whole towns are destroyed. An estimated 10,000 civilians have been killed. And thousands remain trapped near the front line, travelling along a desolate road flanked by flats on either side.
I was there to help. I knew that someone had to go get the people out of the more serious places.
How do you train to be an evacuator?
I don't think any of us trained.
Dude, no, evacs are sketchy, man. I mean, you show up, have a van with as many seats as you can fit into it, be willing to drive, be willing to die, I don't know. There's not any large organizations doing evacs, that's the thing. Usually it's just little groups, you know, who are in contact with each other, but kind of operate alone.
So some people like to be led, some people like to lead, right? I guess that's true. Like, I don't know if I like it, but I... Do I like it? Maybe. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I never thought about that. I was already kind of building up a social media presence, so to say. It was small time. But I was already spreading information that we're doing evacuations in Lysychansk. And I started getting messages saying, hey, we have this relative. Like, hey, can you pick these people up?
So you're given an address.
Yeah.
And you'll drive in and rescue them.
Yeah, yeah, they'll be like, yeah, we have, I don't know, our grandma's there, she wants to leave, or, you know, our dad is living there, he doesn't want to leave, but can you try and persuade him, and stuff like that.
Babula!
Grandma, what's your name?
Halia.
Come on, let's go, in the car.
Halia!
Incoming. The elderly woman's hurried into a car. Grats, let's go. The car races off.
I can work in these super dangerous areas. I can do videos from there. I can put it together into like a social media clip.
Forget the car, move. Grandma, you okay? Yes, I'll tell you how I taught my calf to dance. The adrenaline will help you make it there. Move. God help us. Jerky film of them running with the old woman shouting move as explosions erupt nearby. Grandma, come on. Help, grab her by the other hand. Then, safely in a car, the old woman says, I'm alive, to spite those assholes. They'll never get me.
So we got the grandma out, and that video did really well. That got like, I don't know, 6-7 million views maybe combined.
Why was a social media presence important for people?
Man, funding. We just need diesel in the tank, man. I think with Instagram especially versus like the other social medias, with Instagram you can tell a story and have them not only fall in love with like the work that you're doing, but you as a person, if you're able to show your personality, which some of the guys have figured out how to do that, and you can make obscene amounts of money, man.
Yeah, that in the first month, I accrued enough to buy a four-wheel drive, which my commander wanted. Just filming cats and dogs, timing them with the artillery. The cat did better than anything. The dog would come second. And then a Kalashnikov, a rifle, would be third. So cat, dog, AK.
When I first met Brandon, he told me to have more cats and dogs in my videos in order to get more followers. Yeah. It's interesting. There's definitely a strategy to it, you know?
Come in, Iggy.
Do you remember meeting Chris for the first time?
Yeah, yeah. It was cool to see, like, a you know, another dude, like, similar in age. I hoped he was American till he opened his mouth. I was like, shit. He's like, hello, and I was like, damn it, man. Because I love, you know, meeting Americans over there. It's cool. We have, like, a little bit of camaraderie.
Was he quite green? Was he did he?
Yeah, he's pretty green. In the beginning, he was doing super simple things. You know, like, nothing unnecessarily dangerous. He was very willing, though. He had, like, a ton of willingness.
So, just arrived in Bakhmut. My van is parked under a bridge for safety reasons. And the other guys in 4x4s have gone off to pick up lots of people today and then ferry them back here as kind of a meeting point, and then go back in some more, and then we'll leave together. So here I am, waiting, just listening to the artillery going off around me and some small arms firing in Bakhmut. Who knows how long this is going to be. Probably a few hours.
Where are the guys? Do you have comms with them?
Somebody said they're coming back, but I wasn't sure which one.
May I?
Chris wanted to do much more than sit at a bridge in a bus. I could tell that much about him for sure.
So you take these two guys to Kramatorsk railway station.
Okay.
You take the lady with a broken arm to Kramatorsk hospital number 3.
He wouldn't have been... He wasn't very happy, kind of, from these missions I had for him. He wanted to be more in the mix and in the action, of course.
Are we all going out together, or am I...
No, you go alone.
Right, sure.
Thank you for the help. I know it's not the most glamorous job sitting under...
No, it's fine, yeah. It is what it is.
In the early weeks, we were bringing out hundreds of people. Usually, you know, people with kids leave first, the families. And that's like as the front line is encroaching, like approaching that city. But over time, okay, the people who did need to leave stayed way too long.
So the last people that wanted to leave generally...
Yeah, they're poor, old, and stubborn. Yeah. It's like Russians right around the corner, you know, and that's when they want to leave. So by the time Chris was doing evacs, it's risky.
So you started doing evacuations with Chris?
Yeah. He legitimately wanted to help people. We've spent quite a bit of time together.
That looks like a good angle.
Yeah, it's pointing up.
And you've enjoyed working alongside Chris?
With Chris? Yeah, Chris was fun. We're just two ridiculous guys with similar sense of humor and high fear threshold, I guess you'd say.
Messages read, Natasha, 71 years old, in the basement of Block 7. The address is shown as a red tag on a map, then footage driving along a bombed-out street.
Do you remember this day?
Yep.
What do you remember? Where's this?
Volodar. It's right next to the front. And there's unexploded ordnance everywhere.
Jerky film of the men getting out of their vehicle.
That looks like a good angle.
We'd be given the name and address, where to go, and then, as stupid as it is, we use Google Maps. And they've made it so that the maps aren't as accurate, so that Russia can't use them.
Okay, peace out, gangsters.
For speed, Chris and I split into two teams, each of us with an interpreter, so we could get out of there as fast as possible.
All right, let's fucking do this.
So what military backup do you have?
None.
We're on our own.
Okay.
Drones can spot you, and they carry grenades. They can drop a grenade on you.
Ah, shit.
Body cam footage of one man running behind another through the bombed-out estate of flats. The man filming slips over on the ground before quickly getting back up again and following the other to an entrance to one of the blocks. The lead man consults a map on his phone as they orientate themselves.
Fuck.
That's, where are we on that map? Okay.
He snaps a couple of photos of the area on his phone.
Oh, there's Russia to our left.
That's where the assholes are.
They run off again along a pathway through the destroyed estate.
Okay.
They pause at the sound of an explosion.
Okay, let's go.
They run on past debris and mounds of rubble.
Drone! Whoa! Move, move, move! Go, go, go!
They're now running full pelt along a path beside the buildings before dashing into an entrance to a stairwell.
Let's go in this building.
But just wait a minute. Obviously.
I bet that was a fucking drone dropping a grenade.
Footage from Chris's camera scouring the deserted estate.
So we just had to run across an open area. It was like 400 meters from the Russians' open plain. Like, we can see them, they can see us. Sort of situation.
They're now on the move again, Chris filming the man in front as they run on through the estate.
Hold on, Pasha.
Wait. Pasha?
Yeah? I dropped my keys. Yeah, fucking pocket.
Okay.
It's okay.
Chris runs back the way they came and picks up his keys off the ground. He calls out, evacuation. They pick up speed and are now running as fast as they can across the open ground that the buildings are surrounding. They dash across the debris-strewn grassland.
Holy fuck.
The lead man bangs on a door. After repeated bangs, an elderly woman comes to the door and he says, good afternoon. We've come for you. There's still space in the minibus, so if you want to leave, let's do it. I haven't gathered all my things yet. Do you want help? Yes, if you can. Let's go. They follow her into the dark room, which is cluttered with rubbish. Leave these boxes here. You just say what you need. I need this. So this box. Yes.
This box here?
Yeah. What's it say?
Chris carries out a cardboard box, followed by several black bags. As they're piled up from inside, the woman says, I still have more things to bring up.
Jesus Christ.
Do you really need this? Yes, that's a must. You can put it down. No, would you please put it on top neatly? The other man, Pasha's grinning.
Oh my God. She's got a lot of stuff. Pasha, there's too much stuff.
Coat hangers.
Yeah.
Fuck.
This is insane.
The grey-haired woman says, guys, I'm begging you, leave me alone. You can't just do that. Throw my things away. Don't cry. We have to hurry. Sunset is coming.
Ай яй яй!
Что они?
Давай, давай! You don't need this. You don't need this. Come on, come on. Death, we will die.
Where is my jacket? Oh my god!
That's the most I ever saw someone try to take out.
Okay. Dobry, dobry.
But I also understand. How do you leave everything you have?
They're now walking through the estate, carrying her things and comforting her.
It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. Okay. Chris. And Natasha? Да, Natasha. Dobry, dobry, Natasha.
Introducing himself, Chris says, "Good afternoon, Natasha." So they walk to the waiting van.
Okay, that's the last of it. We're done. Okay, Natasha.
At last, they all get into the van and drive away through the estate. The camera inside the van is filming like a dash cam as they drive along the narrow, deserted street.
See you later, Ruskies.
Woo! Chris's dad, Rob, sits watching the video on Chris's laptop.
So, you had no idea what he was up to?
None.
He kept it all secret?
Yes.
The first we heard about him out there was when he called us to say, "Oh, I'm out in Poland."
That's right, in Warsaw, wasn't it?
No, don't worry, I'm not going to go into Ukraine. I'm going to stay and help out in any way I possibly can in Poland.
Completely safe, Mum and Dad, you know. Don't worry. This is very boring, but it's vital work. But oh no, we should have realised actually, because Chris doing something which is dull is not Chris, is it?
Yeah. When we were speaking on the phone, and it flashed up on my on my mobile, a Ukrainian network came up, and I said, "Chris, I said, how come it's saying Ukraine?" Oh, that's because I'm just so close to the border, he's probably picked up the Ukrainian network. And
quick as a flash.
Yes, absolutely.
Don't worry about it, you say.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm here at Bakhmut train station, and just outside there's this huge crater. It's obviously very near miss.
A symbol shows 1,197 likes.
For about a month, he was coming and going.
And would you think about him when he was away?
Yeah.
Tell me about your feelings towards Chris.
Well, we were never alone. But he kind of like, I felt like he's following me around a bit. I mean, it was not a very big space. We lived in the same apartment with 15 other people, but he would just be there on the sofa with me. Like, if I sit down, he'd just sit down next to me.
He was always there.
He was always there.
You look around, he was there.
I kind of enjoyed it. After a while, I started enjoying it because he was very different. He took my, that depression just pushed it somewhere aside and brought my attention on him. He was like a force of nature, actually. That's for sure. He was flirting all this time, so. We were sharing a room all the time with some people. There was never space, but then suddenly somebody was moving out, so That's when I realized, well, I don't want to share a room with anybody anymore. I just want to share a room with Chris. I wanted to be discreet all the time, so I didn't want to openly say, well, I'm moving in here and I'm going to... And Chris is moving into this room with me. And Chris said, well, don't be silly. They all know we are together. Everybody knows. And I'm like, okay. It's out of my hands.
Footage of waves of jets roaring past overhead.
Just being at war, being in, like, in danger and having this crisis all around you kind of brought us very, very close together, and it was, like, very emotional. He was going somewhere again and suddenly said he loved me, and I just hugged him. I didn't say it back. I didn't know what to react. I didn't really believe it, but then he kept saying it for the next couple of days.
Like, a number of times before I first said I love you to you, I wanted to say it, but I held myself back. And then when I did say it, and you said nothing, and I was like, fuck you. I then obviously said it a few times, and then I was like, actually, I'm just gonna pressure you or make you feel weird. So that's why I stopped saying it.
It felt really tough. He said, I'm not gonna nag you with this anymore. I'm not gonna say it anymore. That's what he thought. And then I said it, so it's just everything was moving. It felt like everything so chaotic, and at the same time, so it was like an island of just calmness and nice emotions when I was with him. Yeah.
I guess being there, it can be thrilling, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got the social media element too.
Well, you're seen as a hero, you know? Everybody sees you as a good person doing good things.
Can people start to change their behaviors, you know, because of their audience?
No, 100%, yeah. Like I said, we're human, man. You know, you start to seek out that stuff, you know, maybe take more risks. Yeah. There's definitely like a negative side to it, in my opinion. You are doing it though because you have a heart and you have this connection with yourself, and you know, you're not doing it for money, most likely, right? You're doing it because you believe in something. So you have to have that internal dialogue, and I think it's just constantly back and forth.
So Chris is doing well as an evacuator.
Yeah, yeah. He's got the adventure going. He feels like he's accomplishing things. Yeah. Problem is that things just went farther and farther. Well, as soon as he got that Toyota Land Cruiser running, he just started going by himself. Woo. I even asked him why he would go by himself when I would go with him, and he told me that he knew I wouldn't go because it was too dangerous, so he just went by himself.
Messages read, Mykola Ivanovich and wife, 80s, Nekrasov Street, block 38, basement 3rd, entrance from yard. Footage, driving through a bombed-out estate. On a map, East Bakhmut.
Okay, we are in the grey zone now.
What is the grey zone?
No man's land. Like, it's, you know, it's where the war properly is, where it's not held by Ukraine or Russia. So, you know, it fluctuates all the time. Whoever gives us an address to go to, generally speaking, has some information of where the battle is.
Like, the more time you spend in that area, the more likely you are to run into the Russians.
But Chris, you go no matter what.
So, down there, you know, the basement of that.
Okay. This has got to be 38, right?
21, 42, 34, 34, 36, 38. Okay, let's fucking run the gauntlet.
Jerky body cam video shows him break cover and sprint across an open area of waste ground between flats and buildings. He runs along a wide pathway and into the entrance to a stairwell.
Fuck. Okay. But where's the fucking basement?
He opens the door to the flat and steps in, saying, "Good day, evacuation." He walks through the empty rooms of the apartment, quickly glancing out of an open window. He moves quickly from one room to the next, looking out of another wide open window. He says, "That's not where I should be parked."
That's not where I should be parked.
He exits the dwelling and heads down a flight of stairs to the entrance he came in through. He waits there for a moment before breaking cover and running out into the open. He runs along the path that's alongside the buildings before pausing at another entrance door. He then runs on and takes cover, checking the map on his phone. He moves along to another entrance identical to the previous one, leading to a stairwell. He says, "A basement," then heads down the steps leading to it. He switches on the torch on his phone and illuminates the brightness. Going through the gloomy rooms, he calls out, "Good day." He tries a locked door and calls out, "Evacuation."
Evacuati!
Good afternoon.
Dobry day.
Finding no one there, he says to himself, "Where the fuck are they?"
Fuck, where are they?
He's now back at the entrance again, in dazzling sunlight, above the desolate, bombed-out buildings and debris. He pauses there for a moment, then runs out into the open. Running further along the path, the shaky video shows him heading into a ruined entranceway piled with rubble.
Dobry den! Dobry den!
Getting no answer to his call, he steps carefully over the rubble as he makes his way back out of the entranceway. He runs out into the open again, through the open ground of the estate. He passes by a deserted children's play area as he rounds a corner alongside more buildings. Piles of shattered glass and debris litters the ground. He steps into another entrance door, finding himself in an empty lobby area. After a moment, he returns to the entrance door and pauses there. Breaking cover again, he runs further alongside the building, the jerky body cam footage showing him then pausing in another doorway. He tries the metal doors, but they appear to be locked. He runs further along, towards an awning protruding from the side of the building, below which is the entrance to what appears to be a shop. Heading inside, there are empty counters, freezer units, and shelves. He walks into a back room.
Dobry day.
His torchlight illuminates a sturdy-looking door which appears to be locked. He turns back. He makes for the entrance and steps outside, then begins running alongside the building again, over piles of broken glass and debris. He rounds a corner of the building and continues on. Pausing, he exclaims, "Please tell me you're down here."
Got him.
He's banged on a silver metal door with graffiti on it. Good afternoon. Evacuation. The door opens and a dog creeps out, then back in again. The camera's pointing at the ground as he greets the person inside. English volunteer. Wait a sec. The person says, "Come in," and he steps into a pitch dark room. He asks, "Mikola Ivanovich?" No. Next one. He says thank you, and the person shakes his head and says good luck as he steps back outside.
Third entrance, looks like.
Checking his phone screen, he then jogs on along the path beside the flats. Counting them, he passes the first entranceway on his left, then the second. Heading into the third, he's in a stairwell.
Dobry day! Evacuacji! Dobry day!
Fuck, they're not even here.
He heads outside again and runs back to the entrance he just passed. Opening the metal door, he finds himself in an identical rubble-strewn stairwell.
Dobry den! Evacuacji! Dobry den!
Tell me that's the person.
Evacuacji!
Where's this dog?
Dobry den!
He's outside.
Let's have a fucking swig of this Coke.
Jesus Christ.
He picks up a bottle of Coke, then thinks better of it. Just beside the entrance is a slim wrought iron gate behind which a dog is barking.
Evacuate, evacuate.
Stairs lead down to a basement, and a middle-aged woman comes to quieten the dog, saying, "Stop it, no." As Chris taps at his phone, she unlocks and opens the gate. English volunteer, yes? Evacuation.
English volunteer, yeah? Evacuacji.
She replies, yes, yes, yes. Now just a second. Mikola Ivanovich, she corrects him. Nikolai Nikolaevich. Come on in, please. He goes down the stairs into a darkened room. He says, "Good afternoon, English volunteer." Someone says, "You found us."
Okay.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, давай. Да. Okay, почекай. Почекай.
He jogs up to his parked 4x4 and gets in. He reverses swiftly up to the entrance, where the middle-aged woman's helping an elderly man out who's walking with the aid of a stick. Behind them, another middle-aged woman's helping an elderly woman out, holding her hand tightly. The old couple are helped into the back of Chris's car. He says, "You're welcome, you're welcome."
Thank you.
One of the younger women says, earnestly, "Chris, thank you." The other younger woman hugs him and he says, "Good luck." Okay, goodbye, as he gets in the driver's seat.
Bye.
Filmed through the windscreen of his car, Chris is driving away through the desolate estate. He's driving along the narrow pathways alongside the buildings, rather than on the road which runs through the estate and passes bare trees, and deserted, bomb-damaged concrete blocks of flats.
I texted him and said, "You awake and alive?" He said, "Always, literally can't die," at 2:02 a.m. And then we started a conversation about something that we had done. We always joke about that stuff, you know? I always assumed I would die. And so we had like gallows humor, you know? Like, we'd talk about dying and random shit happening all the time, and I'm sure he was a realist as well. Like, he seemed mature, you know? I think there was definitely an optimism kind of thing there.
Can you take a photo?
As the group emerge from Chris's car, a man takes a group photo of them. He's pictured standing with three locals on either side of him, including the elderly couple. Katie, Chris's sister.
I think it was quite late in the evening, and I got a message from Chris saying, "Hey, you might see a post on my Instagram. Don't worry, I'm dramatising it to try and get donations. So please don't tell or show Mum and Dad about it." I could tell that it was getting close to the front line. The devastation was increasing. The casualties were increasing. The work was getting more dangerous. You know, it probably would turn into a bit of an argument where I'd say, "You've got to tell them, it's not fair." And he's like, "Kate, listen to me. I'm not telling them, I'm protecting them." It was hard, for sure, because I knew that Mum and Dad were worrying, but I knew that they probably would worry more. So I was prepared to kind of keep this to myself.
Yeah.
On a map, a route passes from Dnipro, travelling west through Ukraine, then Hungary and Austria, to Switzerland. Olya behind the wheel on a mountain road in the sunshine, smiling.
We wanted to spend some time together, away from the people, just alone and in a safer space. So we went to Switzerland together, driving. There were like 30 hours of driving non-stop. It feels like a different type of reality. Just wanted to be, like, have a feeling like we're on vacation or something, take a break.
Don't try to. So myself and Cheekbones over here, give a wave. Wonderful. We've just arrived in the Swiss Alps after travelling 30 hours. And this is the view. And we are absolutely jolly dodgered. Tree kind of gets in the way a little bit.
Wow.
But still. Look at that. Look at that. Back in view. Boy. Unbelievable. Right, so this is the beast from the east. Olya Khomenko. Look how she eats. Isn't it monstrous? And this is where we finally ended up.
So we spent a couple of days, of course, being normal. That's all I wanted. And he left to England and I went back. He needed to see his parents.
You can carry on your bickering.
This is about 1 mile away from my house. Two, max.
You better be impressed by one of these.
So when did you first learn that he was in the UK?
Literally when he just turned up, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
My house is kind of near this big block. Like, around there-ish.
I think he felt he had to come clean, that he was out in Ukraine. To a certain extent.
Nowhere near the front line. Again, just distributing aid. Completely safe. I stay in my van. I don't get involved in evacuating people. Bless him. And you had to believe him. Because you wanted to believe that, didn't you? You wanted to believe he wasn't in danger.
It was so lovely having him home for
For a week or so, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was gorgeous.
Was it?
Yeah, we went out on some lovely bicycle rides. We had great times.
It was nice weather as well,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm. It was a magical summer that way for us.
It was a beautiful barbecue weather Thursday afternoon, like after work style. Everyone had been working from home or working around in Cornwall. Chris called. He said, "I've heard you were having a barbecue. Can I come over? I'm back in the UK." Mm. Like, oh, wow, I can't believe that. And just sort of blew our minds for about 3 or 4 hours about what he'd actually been doing. And just it was quite a contrasting day because it was obviously quite a nice, sunny, Cornish afternoon. And you were just hearing about Chris on the front line. A lot of us were, like, fascinated, but I think equally worried at the same time.
To know that your friend's literally in a war zone and there's a choice of him being there, to be there or not be there, you know, get a job at the pub, it's a lot safer, you know, but that's not Chris.
He loved Ukraine, he loved the Ukrainian people, obviously loved Ola, and he was so invested in that, and he wasn't comfortable with us in our first world society living our ordinary lives when he knew back in Ukraine people were dying and, you know, towns and cities were being devastated. And
we were all just getting on.
Yes, that's right, yes.
He was like a caged lion.
So you could feel his frustration?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm going to be on, like, public television with a fresh cut and a black eye.
Okay. What happened after we left you, then, last night?
Oh. You guys left. I walked into the hotel so that you guys could leave, and then I went to go buy alcohol. And that's what I do. And then I drink until I don't remember, so...
Right. And you don't remember what happened?
No.
Daniel, a clean-cut 30-something white man, dabs the cut under his eye.
So going home?
Yeah. So I went home. I went back to work. Everybody was really supportive, asking how the experience was, things like that. And the way I would explain it was that physically I was home, like my body was there, but my heart and my mind were still in Ukraine. I could not focus on anything.
It's kind of hard to care about whatever, going for a bike ride or putting sod down in my yard. Like, who really gives a shit about these things when I know that people are getting killed right now?
It bothered me for the longest time. Why it would soothe me to hear the artillery again. And I couldn't put my finger on it. And then eventually, I think I came to the idea that I feel closer to the people who need me here. So it's not the sound or the danger that's soothing. It's being closer to where the fight is. It's being closer to the people who need us, you know, to the boys and to the women who are fighting on the front line. I feel closer to them. And that's the soothing part. It's not the danger. It's not the adrenaline. It's being closer to them.
A broken line traces the route on a map from Cornwall to Kiev.
When he came back, I went back to Kiev and he went to Kramatorsk. And... yeah, from then on, he was getting evacuations almost every day.
But so. You were scared for him, right?
Of course. Yeah, I was, but I was always... not absolutely sure, but there was this sense in me that he's safe.
Good morning. Good morning.
I miss you. I really do.
Have a good trip. Stay safe, please. Love you.
Film of a man on a stretcher being fed water from a plastic bottle.
Okay, let me.
Okay, I'm good.
Wrapped in a blanket, the stretchered man is carried down a flight of steps. Outside, the man is asked, all right, okay, almost done, almost there.
How to show, okay, almost done, almost there.
I spent like half an hour going through all our photos, trying to find the nicest one, a recent one, and change the filter to bring out your eyes. Put in a fair amount of effort to try to show you off to the world. Because I want to show you off to people.
He sent me this picture of us in the pub, and I said we will have pretty kids, but with bad teeth, implying that I don't have very nice teeth. He was like, "Excuse me, I have lovely teeth," and I was like, "I'm pretty sure my genes are stronger than yours." And then he went quiet, but he was actually drafting a list of things, like what our kids would get from whom. It was a list of Chris and Ola, perfect child. I did have this fantasy. I couldn't help myself. When you're in love, you just want to think that there is future, and we will be together after war is over, and we might have kids. We will live in Ukraine, but we'll come to Cornwall often too for vacations. Yeah, I had that fantasy, couldn't really help it. And I texted him that, yeah, I have this thing in my head that I cannot really fight, just something normal with you. He was like, normal? I'm out. Like, I will take nothing but extraordinary.
After 7 months of war, a different Russian threat is on the march. Soldiers in fatigues and black masks filming themselves as they travel on an artillery vehicle, then waves of missiles blasting into the skies from a rocket launcher. The Wagner Group is a private army of 50,000 mercenaries and ex-prisoners. It is killing and torturing its way across the front line. Soldiers waving a black flag on a ruined building, dead bodies, one with hands bound, lying on the ground. 15th of December, 2022. Video from behind a vehicle's windscreen as it's travelling along a dingy road at dusk. 9 p.m. Very blurry film appears to show flames and a nearby explosion.
Fuck. Oh my fucking god. Fuck.
Returning from a solo evacuation, radio contact with Chris is lost. Daytime footage inside a car traveling along a bombed out road. 10 hours later, Daniel.
Okay, here we are. Bakhmut. Chris's girlfriend fucking texted me yesterday, asking me where he was. I'm like, I don't know. So it's the morning, and now Cherry and I are off to go get him. Say hello.
Hey.
Hopefully, we're gonna find him. We're off to the east.
Demolished buildings.
Time to leave.
Right here. Oh shit, yeah. There's a hole. Hey, look!
Isn't that the silver Land Rover?
Shit!
They hurry along muddy ground towards the car lying on its side in a lake of water.
Chris's car.
Daniel peers in through the half-open window and finds the car empty.
Okay, he's fine. Okay. All right, no. But there's no blood. And he just went off the road. He's fine.
I mean, I laugh about these things, but none of it's a joke, obviously.
He's fine.
But anyways, I was happy that he wasn't killed. So we finally found out that Chris had to sleep in a trench that night.
The adventure continues. It's currently about 4:15. I've been in this trench for 2 hours now. This is the toilet.
How many vehicles did he go through?
Pretty well, 4. I mean, he had a van. He ended up getting hit by a tank with that van. He had his first 4x4. I think he had that thing for less than a week before he ended up getting shot at by whatever, BMP, grenade launcher, whatever it was, getting shot at by that. Chris showed up later in that day.
Hi, Chris.
Bonjour.
This is so classic.
Really, just a taxi drive because this is an easy place to go to.
You don't know that.
Well, I mean...
Okay, this is coming from a guy who just got fucking plugged by a tank and destroyed his truck. Yes, it's just a fucking taxi ride. If you don't mind getting killed.
Chris puffs on a cigarette as he drives.
That was a horrible night for me, just hell. I didn't tell his parents, didn't alert anyone. I was just waiting that it's some news from Dan and maybe that he's actually gonna come back online, and he did. He started to do more risky things than go to places where nobody is willing to go.
And the more he went in that direction, did that put any distance between you and your relationship?
Yeah, because I would worry, and he hated that I worried. I was in Kiev and just trying to live a normal life, but he actually wanted me to drop everything and come and do evacuations with him because he needed somebody to interpret. Come and join me. You are my partner. Come and be my partner here. So let's do it together. You'll see how rewarding it is. But mentally, I was not ready to see all these broken houses and broken families. I didn't want to do that.
Did you argue at all about... Did you...
Yeah.
Okay. Look. You know the deal. You should know the deal. This is fucking war. I've been to people's houses where they've been dead because I was a day late. It's the worst feeling on earth.
Oh, shit, but...
I keep laboring on at you. Please come to Kramatorsk. But you're not entertaining that idea.
An old woman gestures to a mound of bags. No, no, those ones.
What's that?
All of this.
That.
Like, I know it fucking is horrible to hear, but I save lives. That's a really important thing to do. I have to be there doing it. I'm sorry, I know it's fucking horrible to hear. I don't want to be... Look how important I am. I'm not, just... I serve a purpose in this country, and I have to be there. Because they literally need me.
Okay.
Sitting in her wheelchair, clutching his hand, the woman says, "My little dove, thank you, my bunny." Chris replies, "You're welcome." He's at the wheel, driving away. 24th of December 2022, a selfie video. Chris is wearing his helmet and body armour.
So, Merry Christmas. A white Christmas I've not really experienced before. However, not experienced Christmas and war either. It's very peculiar to be here. You kind of forget that it's Christmas at all. Like, I really have no idea. Because there's no sign of it anywhere, of course. But yeah.
The plan was I would come for Christmas and he would come to Kiev for New Year's because, well, it was also his birthday. He said that everybody's kind of leaving and he's the only one who can do the job. So he had to stay there. It was just little by little, keeping us further apart.
And did you say, please stop, please?
I did, but he didn't want to hear it. He only took some time, like a day off or two, because he was ill. And just luckily, I guess, maybe it was on Christmas. And we spent a really nice day together. I cooked Christmas dinner.
Turkey?
No, not turkey. Just pigs and blankets and mashed potatoes, that's it.
War.
She gets a dish out of the oven.
We have some Christmas decorations.
I've got the flu. I feel absolutely awful.
Did you reconnect though? Did you?
It felt like we did. Yes. It was. It felt like he finally, his focus is not on the evacuations, but on me and us. It felt like that time in Lviv, long time ago. You know.
Still in love.
Mm-hmm. I was supposed to leave the next day after Christmas. Chris being Chris, he asked me to stay another day. He basically took me off the train and I stayed another day. And I'm really glad I did. And the next day, actually I have a picture. He was waiting for my train to go. And I had the thought that this might be the last time I see him. And that's exactly what it was.
A picture of a sad-looking Chris sitting on the ground on the platform. Ollie's expression becomes solemn. 6th of January, 2023.
Russia has been sending large numbers of mercenary fighters from the so-called Wagner Group to the front line in the mining town of Soledad. The battles in this area are among the worst of the conflict so far.
So a lady contacted me asking for her mum to be evacuated from Soledad, and I asked Andrew to go and pick her up.
Tell me about Andrew.
Oh, Andrew's like very kind, very intelligent person, very determined. Oh, he was just... Andrew was a good person.
As we figured out later, Andrew asked Chris to go with him.
The route from Kramatorsk to Soledad.
Then by mid-second half of the day, the lady calls and she said no one's been there yet. But, you know, it's not entirely unusual to be absent for a day. So I asked Dan to go and pick up this lady.
Hello, gentlemen in the armored personnel carrier.
Orthodox Christmas Eve, January 6th, 4 p.m. It's starting to get dark. I'm getting super close to Solidar to pick up a woman and get her out of there. Hopefully before it gets dark, because it's not smart to be rolling around with your lights on.
Holy fuck, what the hell is that?
Fires are burning in Solidar.
They pull up at some flats, and the video cuts out.
Well, that didn't go as planned. I rolled up, there's soldiers in cover, and they told me to get the fuck out of there because of danger.
A call from Iggy. Daniel, did you get the lady?
Yo! I showed up at that address. And there was a bunch of soldiers in cover, and they were on the radio, and they ordered me to get out of there. Huh? They ordered me to get out of there. The military.
She said you showed up, and as she was coming down with her bags, you left.
What? They fucking told me to leave.
Yeah, but the lady, she saw you. She said she saw the car. She was going to the car, and the car left.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Well, really bad. I mean, if the fucking... Well, I'll go back there. The fucking...
Can you go back now? She's ready.
Yeah, tell her to be down there and get ready to throw her bags in here.
Okay. So she's going to be standing by the doorway right now. How long is it going to take you?
Like, less than 10 minutes.
Okay.
This is not exactly how you want to be doing things around here.
He's traveling along in near darkness. As he makes his way along, gunfire erupts nearby.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know where that gunfire is coming from.
Fuck it. I'm getting out of here. Sorry, you should have left fucking months ago. The jerky video from inside the vehicle continues for a long moment, the grim darkness only punctuated by occasional bright lights. January 7th, 2023. Contact has been lost with Chris and Andrew for over 24 hours.
I called the British Embassy in Ukraine, like a emergency number, yeah, and I told them that there's a person missing.
And we had a phone call at 5:30 Saturday afternoon. The Foreign Office.
Yeah, we had to inform you that your son has been reported missing.
Chris, he's always got into scrapes and always got out of them.
Mm. So we'd hoped against hope that that would still be the case. We never lost hope, did we?
No.
Chris's dad looks devastated.
Then his parents called me. And I was really dreading talking to them. For some reason, I thought they will start, just blaming me or something. It was difficult to actually... Sorry, just a sec. It took me some time to get ready for that conversation. But they were really nice, and they already knew that something is wrong because he was not online for 24 hours, more than 24 hours at that point.
Orla texted me. I was back stateside. Immediately started, hitting up contacts, you know. No contacts who were civilians, but just military that I knew in the area. Foreigners who were operating around there. Seeing what they knew, what they were able to do.
I assumed that Chris got stuck somewhere, and I assumed that he was just going to be sleeping in some random building.
Don't worry. It's Chris. Chris is always fine. It's going to be okay.
Two British men who were working as volunteers in Ukraine are missing. Christopher Parry, who's 28, and 48-year-old Andrew Bagshaw were last seen on Friday in the eastern Donetsk region, where fighting has been intense.
We were home, kicking our heels, and we didn't know what to do, or we were helpless that we actually then went up to London and stayed with Kate for about, I don't know, was it about a week we stayed with her?
Yeah.
11th of January, 2023. On screen, the Wagner Group Telegram channel, a message reads, "The body of one of the foreign fighters has been found. It's accompanied by photos of Chris and Andrew's passports."
We were in town, and I noticed there was a couple of missed calls on my phone. On strange numbers, which I didn't know. And I phoned one of them. And he said, "Is it Mr. Parry?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Unfortunately, I've got to..."
She takes his hand.
"They didn't know we were up in London. It was the technical police, wasn't it? They were at our house."
And we just...
cried like babies. And then we walked to St Mary's, didn't we?
I ran down the stairs. Mum and Dad were at the entrance to St Mary's Hospital. And I shouted "Boo!" behind them. And they just turned around and grabbed me. And we just walked under this archway to a door, and they just told me.
She nods, tearful.
Who rang you up to tell you that he and Andrea
Rob
had died?
And Christine. Or ran me up to they tell me, you. Yeah. They ask me if I'm alone and if I'm... can I, like, go somewhere to go to a friend or something? What's up?
Almost 3 weeks since they were last seen alive, there's now confirmation from the families of Chris Parry and Andrew Bagshaw that the two men have been killed in eastern Ukraine.
Chris died from gunshot wounds to the head and torso. It's thought the British volunteer may have been killed by Wagner Group mercenaries in a possible war crime.
In a statement released through the Foreign Office, Chris Parry's family said he had found himself drawn to Ukraine in its darkest hour, and added his selfless determination in helping the old, young and disadvantaged had made them extremely proud.
At the funeral service in a crowded cathedral, everyone rises to their feet as the coffin is carried in. Clergy lead the procession, carrying a tall cross, followed by Chris's coffin carried up the aisle on the shoulders of pallbearers. The men in dark suits disperse into the congregation, leaving the coffin at the altar. Daniel.
After Chris and Andrew were killed, I mean, those guys were like my main friends, so it was, you know, pretty lonely being there, for one thing. And then I just didn't feel like I was accomplishing enough anymore. I had to leave one day. Like, I couldn't stay there forever. I have a home, I have a mortgage, I have a wife. So I just, had to go back to my regular life, I guess.
Rob and Christine's stone cottage, nestled in countryside. A taxi draws up outside and Olya gets out, greeted with hugs by the family.
It was rough. I feel really, you know, guilty that I wasn't there, able to do anything. You know, when you lose people close to you like that, this can push you away from people, create a barrier, or it can push you closer to people. You can choose to love harder. As cheesy as it is, it's fucking true, you know?
Christine wraps her arms around Olya in a tight hug. Christine, Rob, Olya and Katie are standing at Chris's grave, marked with a single cross bearing a photo of him. Katie has her arm around Olya's shoulders as they stand in silence. Later, Rob stands at the desk in Chris's bedroom with his laptop resting on it and taps it with his fingers.
This is my way of dealing with the loss of him. Well, it shows the better signs of humanity, and there is an awful lot of good humanity out there.
Young people changing the world.
Absolutely, they? Yeah, and that is the good humanity which is coming out, and we mustn't forget that.
Have you any idea how many people he evacuated?
Well, it's on good authority that it was over 400.
400?
Yeah, him personally, yeah.
400 people?
Yeah. That was what he was born to do.
A year after his death, the government of Ukraine awarded Chris a National Medal of Honour. An estimated 10 million Ukrainians remain displaced as a result of the war. No one knows when they'll be able to return home.